microphones. Everything begins at the microphone. That's what captures the human voice. That's what captures music and instruments and all that. And we put it all on the radio. So which microphones to use, and how do you select the right one, and how do you process that microphone, or do you need to? How do you install it? How do you tell people? All that. It's all coming up. Coming up with Tom Ray, Chris Tarr, and Cornelius Gould is here too, next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry, at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Delighted to be here. Oh my goodness, we've got a great show today. We have some of the greats on the show. Not me. We have three other greats on the show. We're going to have a special interview with Cornelius Gould. That's coming up. But first, let's go all the way to Mukwonago, Wisconsin, and see our good friend, Chris Tarr. Hey, Chris. Welcome in.
Hey there. So when these people get here, let me know. So I'll tell you what, weather's still gloomy here. We had a bunch of snow. I mean, we thought winter was over. No. That led to, I had fun the other day. I was in Door County, Wisconsin, installing a new transmitter. Then I get a call about my station in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin, way on the other part of the state. So I hit the road down there in the snow, got about halfway up the hill, and of course couldn't make it any further. So I'm out there hoofing it in the snow with all my gear. And yeah, so I was just getting used to getting 60 degree weather, and here we go with more snow. So whatever. So anyway, glad to be here. Looking forward to today's topic. And of course, you know, Corny's the master. So I'm looking forward to hear what he has to say.
And here to contribute as well is our good friend, Tom Ray, who has a experience with a few microphones. Hey, Tom, welcome in.
Hey, Kirk. Glad to be here. And just a couple of microphones. Kind of like Chris, I woke up this morning and there was snow on the ground. And it's like, wait a minute. I thought this was spring. But anyway, I'm in the process today of working on an automation cutover remotely. So,
Remotely. This is why. Wow, you brave man.
Yeah. Yes, this is why I have very little hair left. that's what I've been up to. I've been busier than a one-legged man at a butt-kicking contest. So
what microphone are you using, Tom? I don't know that I've seen you use that one before.
This is, hang on a minute here. It's a Presonus.
Really? Okay. And is it XLR output or USB output?
No, it's XLR output. It's a condenser mic. They actually don't sound too bad. I have an RE20 that's in the other room. I use that on air with the Car Doctor show, but this one I record everything with. So
are you using a bit of mic processing with it?
Yes, I'm, I've got a, it's a DBX 286.
Okay. Yeah. Very, because I'm hearing a little downward expansion going on because I don't hear room echo when you shut up. And right. It seems like with a condenser mic, I probably should hear some room echo. So it sounds really nice.
Thank you. Surprisingly, this mic is quite directional. So it's, you're not going to hear much on the other side. And the other side is really where the bounce back will come because there's nothing on that wall except, sheetrock.
Sheetrock, yeah. It would bounce a lot. And Chris, you have several different microphones to join us on this show. Today's model is an RE something.
Yeah, I think this is the one I'm going to settle on. I have the MV7 and an SM7, and yeah. I like those, but I really have been happy with the way the RE20 sounds. So I think that is, this is the one I'm going to stick with.
It's interesting. People are opinionated about microphones a lot like they're opinionated about audio processors. I don't know how much can you be objective when our brains want to at least be a little bit subjective? I don't know what we can do about that.
You know, and not only that, and unfortunately, you know, I'm using the built-in processing on the Rodecaster here, so you can hear some room noise. But it's interesting because when you're on the air, everybody's got their favorite mic, and you know, there's the SM5 and the SM7 and the Sennheiser, and I do think some of it's subjective, and I also think some of it is mic processing related. You can make a bad mic sound pretty good with the right processing, and vice versa. You can make a good mic sound really bad with bad mic processing. So, you know, there is some, each mic has different characteristics, and then there's, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, good microphone, good processor, you know, after that, it's just minor tweaks. You know, if you got those two things, it doesn't matter what it is, you're going to sound
good.
A lot of it
also has to do with the way the jock or the announcer works the mic and where he sits and how he does it and such. And, you know, if he's going to back up and the whole shebang. So that also contributes to how you set the processor up. So,
And, you know, RE20s are great for close talkers like this. They sound much better when you're up on them. You know, whereas the kind of mic that Tom has here, you know, a lot of times with those mics, I get those same pop shields to kind of keep yourself, you know, keep people back away from the front of the mic because they really get plosive.
Well, Tom and Chris are going to give us a lot more opinion on mics, but we're going to hear from Cornelius Gould, and it's a pre-recorded interview. I just talked to Cornelius on Friday of last week, so it's a fresh interview done here at my house. I'm already going to apologize for the room noise. We were not using Corny's mic processor from Angry Audio on the recording, although he brought one. It was just a fast setup, and the lighting was just terrible, and my webcam was out of focus. So we spent most of the shot on the close-up camera on Corny's face, which is great because that's, you know, that camera was good. Actually, it was that camera was this one right here. So I edited that in, and it worked out pretty well. So, hey, I'm sorry, you know, don't hire me to be your video producer because you might get some disappointing results. That's coming up. Chris and Tom and I are going to listen to that interview, and then we're going to come back with some practical ideas and thoughts and techniques about microphones in broadcast studios. That's why we invited Tom to come along. He's done a lot of that. Of course, so has Chris, and I've done a little bit of that too. So we got to have practical advice on microphones coming up. Our show is brought to you in part by Nautel, and I got to get a show of hands. If you can get a three shot here, Suncast, Chris. Now, Chris, you're not going to NAB this year. Is that right?
That is correct. Yep.
And Tom, what about you? Are you going to be at NAB or not? Oh, I'm not hearing you.
You're muted there, sir.
That's better. Yeah. I said, no, I won't be going. I've kind of successfully avoided it for 10 years now.
Well, the even if you won't be there, you can still participate in the Nautel activities there because they've got some live streaming going on of that. So I'm going to tell you about that right now. Woo! But that's interesting to know that you're not coming, but you can still participate. And Nautel has gone overboard. First of all, of course, they're doing their NUG at NAB, the Radio Technology Forum. That's Sunday, April 14th at the Flamingo, Las Vegas. The breakfast starts at 8:30 a.m. It's free. The speakers include Paul McLean, David Layer, Jeff Detweiler, Ed Zarnecki, and Bill Robertson. The full session is 8:30 in the morning until 1 p.m., and there's a complimentary lunch, too. They'll feed you twice. And there's optional afternoon sessions from 1:15 to 3:30. It's AUI, the Advanced User Interface, followed by HD Radio 101. Also then, that's not the only thing Nautel's doing for you. There's an HD Radio event Monday, April 15th from 4 to 6 p.m. It's in their booth. And then there's the Transmission Talk Tuesday webcast. That's going on live on Tuesday, April 16th at 12 noon Eastern time. And then there's something else called the 55th Always For You Celebration. They're 55 years old at Nautel. That's Tuesday, April 16th from 4 to 6 p.m. You don't have to remember all that. It's all on their website. And the website for these events is nautel.com/NAB. Short enough to remember, nautel.com/NAB. You can register right there either for in-person or you can register for watching on the web for live coverage of a couple of those events. So check that out at nautel.com/NAB. Thank you, Nautel, for doing so much for our industry and educating engineers, you know, not only, of course, to your own products, but also to technologies that we need to use every day and on the Nautel users group, you know, where the industry is going on various topics. Appreciate it very much. Thanks a lot to Nautel. All right. It is time for us to flip over and watch Cornelius Gould. Let's just roll the tape. Go ahead, Suncast. I'm Kirk Harnack here with Corny Gould. Hey, Corny, good to see you, man.
Good to see you again, too, Kirk.
Thanks for stopping by. I appreciate it.
No problem.
You just coming through Nashville and
yeah, back at the Angry Audio headquarters and dealing with a couple things, getting my friend AB and all that, and figured, hey, Kirk, I'm going to be down here. What are you up to?
So talk about your audio processing designs. Mm-hmm. In some previous TWRT segments, we've talked about your ideas about audio processing. What I notice is even from 20 plus years ago to today, the word chameleon comes in quite a bit. And that's actually a pretty nice descriptive word of your philosophy. Tell me about that.
The whole chameleon idea came about from the early days of my processing when I first was getting into it. And the early analog boxes kind of had this, you know, I was working on things where they can kind of adjust themselves to, you know, your source material. And one of my friends, you know, called it, you know, an audio chameleon. And I was kind of like, huh, that's pretty good. And it just kind of stuck, you know, ever since, you know, and I just kind of kept with it. And it sort of became a benchmark as I went into the DSP world. You know, the benchmark was to emulate as much as what the analog boxes did as possible in DSP. And that's been a long road, you know, to make that happen.
Seems like there's a lot of analogies there. A chameleon makes adjustments to himself in order that his outcome is more predictable. That is, he stays alive.
Yes.
He doesn't get attacked.
Yes.
And so your idea of processing is to make adjustments that are, let's say, they're not necessarily dramatic, but you're very true to the source material, but somehow, Corny, it always sounds better. It sounds better than the original.
The goal is to try to get it to do all the things an audio processor would do without hearing it be an audio processor.
Ah.
So I don't like the sound of the processor adjusting itself. I just want the outcome to be, oh, that's some nice processed audio, but you don't hear things turning up and down necessarily, and you know, you don't hear the mechanics of how it's doing it.
So that famously, a lot of your ideas have gone into the Omnia 11 audio processor.
The really early attempts at the DSP were in the Omnia 11. Yep.
Yeah. So. And then is there anything of yours in the Omnia Volt? Is there some of that technology carried on through there?
The Volt is, there's some minor things in there. I think, is there other things, other characteristics of the 11 that ended up in the Volt?
Mm-hmm.
Like the crossover system of the 11 is in the Volt, the front end crossover. The idea of having top level controls to adjust things that you normally have to dig down into the menus, that stuff we pulled from the 11 and into the Volt, and it's its own version. And I think that carries forward to this day in some of the other products. I think Rob took it and ran with it and other things and put his spin on it all.
Traditionally, audio processors have had different sections, each one operating independently of the other sections. Mm-hmm. So the limiters were not necessarily aware of how hard or how not hard the preceding sections were working. And you changed that with some kind of overall orchestration management.
Yeah, and part of the, when I jumped into the DSP world, you know, all the DSP processors, whether it's running on a computer or in a piece of hardware, they're computers, really. So part of the paradigm shift there was to take advantage of the fact that you are dealing with a computer here to advance forward this idea of self-adjusting.
Ah, you know,
Because you can compare and you can remember things. You've got memory you can use where it's not quite easy in analog to do.
Now, in your career moving forward, you have put your efforts into a newer line of audio processors. Mm-hmm. You're working with Mike Dosh over at Angry Audio.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about this line of chameleon processors, and then we're going to get into the topic for the day.
Okay. So the line of these chameleon processors are these, the reason why they're even called chameleon processors is that they're the first DSP box units that are behaving like the analog in pretty much in every way. Mm-hmm. And that started with the C4, where the C4 really is, it really captured everything that the analog box did. And then the analog box kind of became a museum piece. Up until this point, it was like, I had to keep it going. I had to repair it, replace the capacitors when they were drying out because it was the gold standard that I was trying to achieve. And the C4 met that It was for the first time, and I was able to go, okay, Grandpappy's retired. That's what I called the analog box, Grandpappy, by the way. So anybody who knows me and hears me talk about my stuff, Grandpappy was the last of the analog chameleons that still exist in One Piece, and it was always the one that would mock me in the corner. It's like, you know, with the 11 us, I think I got it. I'll compare to Grandpappy.
Yeah, you may have got it with that new stuff, but Sonny, I still, not quite yet, sir, Sonny.
So I, you know, so it would just mock me like that. So I'll call it Grandpappy.
So you mentioned the C4 processor, and I know that there's a line of several processors for different purposes that Angry Audio is building. What are the different processors?
So you have the C3, which is how this whole thing started, which is the a processed headphone amplifier.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, right now you are listening to raw air and for the most part in most radio studio, not raw air, raw program.
Program, yeah.
In most cases these days because of all the delays over the air. And it's been one of my lingering background wishes to be able to create a processor that you can put in line for that where you just still sound like you're in the air, you know, even though, you know, you can't listen off the transmitter. So the C3 project came about when Mike Dosh, Catfish, had that same idea. He wanted to make a headphone amplifier. You plug in your raw audio, and in your headphones, you sound like you're in the air. So he proposed it to me. Corny, can you do that? I was like, actually, and at this point, I pretty much figured out most of what I needed to do to make the chameleon go. I said, you know, actually, I've got something that can do that. And the other part of the challenge is that he wanted it where there's not a bunch of controls on it. You just have, you know, in his words at the time, I want like three different presets that you can choose. And, you know, can you do something like that? It's like, I can do better. I can make it so that, you know, you tell it what your target is and it adjusts itself to do whatever it needs to do and just ran with it. And
you've done a fair amount of work on the air in podcasts and so forth. What is it? I've been on the air listening to program and I don't like it as much, but when you hear yourself processed and you hear what you end up instantaneously working your voice against the processing. Mm-hmm. And some people, of course, they way overdo that, right? Hi, I'm Randy Radio.
Well, I think a lot of them are people that hear the end result of what disc jockeys sound like, and they want to sound like that, and they don't have a processing chain.
Oh, okay.
So the way they emulate it, hey, everybody, because they can tell that when the disc jockey is getting loud, but he's not getting loud.
Yeah.
So they try to do the same thing by, hey, how's it going? And it just sounds like puking, you know.
Well, sometimes I give presentations to crowds of people and so forth. And whenever I've been in some classroom settings, auditorium classroom, like university, and I can hear myself really well in some of these, and they're very comfortable. Mm-hmm. It's almost like singing in the shower, all right? Mm-hmm. Not that you want to be there when I'm singing in the shower, but you know, that's why people sing in the shower, because they hear themselves well with a little bit of reverb.
Yes.
So, in other words, your own voice sounds better when you can hear yourself well.
Yes.
And when you're talking in an anechoic chamber, you feel like you've got a strain to even hear yourself. And am I?
It can't push enough breath out to make
it. Yeah. But your voice, you know, sounds nicer when you are relaxed. Mm-hmm. Last week, we did an interview at a transmitter site, and I had to be pretty loud to talk over the fans, even though it was still quieter than a tube transmitter. Right. It still had fans.
Yes.
So I felt like we were kind of having to be like at a loud cocktail party, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. So anyway, people feel better and maybe talk nicer when they hear themselves well.
Yes. Once they get used to the fact that they can hear themselves and that they don't sound anything like they thought they did, then you start to subliminally pick up on little things that the processor is doing where it's assisting you. And if everything is adjusted right, it kind of feels like your voice is being pulled out of your mouth. You know, it's just like, this is effortless. I can sound like the way I want. And if it's not right, you're kind of working to try to get that magic back again, and you're always a little off.
So that's the C3. What else you have?
The C4, which is the live stream processor.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't do any encoding, but what it does is it's really super low latency, less than 3 milliseconds. So that you can use it with live streaming video and not have any timing issues with that.
Yeah.
As well as standard, you know, live stream audio like radio stations would. And it's got a lot of applications. There's quite a few churches that are using them for their live streams.
Sure.
Because a common problem there is that, you know, the pastor's at one level and when the band's playing, it's a totally different level than people at home trying to watch this stream or kind of like working the volume control to try to understand everything.
And there are companies that provide church and other streaming solutions. You just plug your video mm-hmm. audio into a box mm-hmm. and off it goes.
Yes.
And that's fine. But if you are not, and video is easy to tell, do I have good video or not?
Right.
But audio requires somebody who kind of knows what they're doing.
Right.
And I must say, hey, churches often have a volunteer mm-hmm. doing that work.
Yes.
Levels really can be all over the place. I'm mm-hmm. not saying they all are, but right, some right. of them really are.
Yeah.
And so your box processing that audio for a video audio stream.
Yes.
It's a darn good idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. And so, you know, and again, it's a chameleon, so it self adjusts and you yeah. just kind of set your target loudness. Most people set it at the middle, you know, and just run with that.
And these boxes are not meant for FM processing or AM processing.
Correct.
They're for headphones or streaming.
The C3 is for headphones. C4 is for streaming.
Yeah.
Other applications you can use a C4 that I thought of are you can use them to process your mix minus feed going out to remote site, because that's another issue where they're you have level issues of the board ops not paying attention. And sometimes this is loud and quiet and you're running the PA, you know, to try to keep it level out. So you can put that in there and it'll level out your programming and sound a little more like a radio station out at the location.
Right.
The music is playing or the commercials. So there's a lot of utility things like that, or maybe put it on a feed for the speakers outside your studio.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
When you want to look in and see what's going on in the studio, there's some processing and sure. you know, and keep things controlled that way. So it's got a wide range of applications.
By the way, you know, a lot of stations would just take a tuner and mm-hmm. put that on the speakers. But if you're HD,
yes,
you've got that.
Or running a profanity delay.
You got all kinds of delay there, and people in the hallway are looking mm-hmm. in at the. Yeah, that's a problem. So if you use your processor, a C4 on mm-hmm. that, then there's virtually no delay,
right.
and it works out fine, and the speakers are controlled.
Exactly.
Okay.
So all that's right. another thing too, and the third chameleon in that hardware lineup is the C level.
Oh, what's
and,
that?
And the C level is. As we all know, the compellers aren't being made anymore. Arians are hard to find.
Yeah.
So people are looking for something as these units are aging out to use as a preprocessor. So C-level is where I took an earlier version of a chameleon and put that in DSP. And originally, the chameleon was a front-end 4-band AGC.
Uh-huh.
That was the original chameleon. And as it progressed over the years, the design became a little more sophisticated, where it did more compression and limiting and things like that, whereas the original was just an AGC. So I brought back the original AGC in DSP form, and it's the C level.
Okay. So, okay. All right. And then there's a software version as well, isn't there?
There's a software version of the streaming processor.
Okay.
And that is the C6S.
Okay. So, and how do people use that? And maybe in the same machine that they're encoding?
Yes. Or a lot of people run it on the automation machine and pipe the automation audio through it. And then the output of it can go to whatever the stream encoder is.
Gotcha.
Throw my hands all in the air.
Okay.
And the C6 has a additional features in that we couldn't fit into the C4. So I've got, you know, codec processing, so it modifies its processing, and some things in the back end to optimize your audio for target codec. So you can
select gotcha.
AAC or HD radios. There are people that are starting to use C6 as HD radio processors
uh-huh.
too.
Uh-huh.
So there's settings for that. And so, yeah, it's pretty cool. And it comes as a standalone or VST plugins.
So we've been talking about all these different processors, and the ones we've mentioned, these are all stereo, they're multi-band,
mm-hmm.
and they're algorithmically designed to handle a certain common function in our broadcasting, whichever it is.
Mm-hmm.
You also have these this interesting idea in mic processing.
Mm-hmm.
And tell you what, we're going to talk about that in just a minute. When we come back, we're talking to Corny Gould, and he is the brains behind Audio Chameleon. We'll be right back.
And we are going to be right back with more from Corny in this interview. We're going to wrap up and talk about the mic processing especially. And then Tom Ray and Chris Tarr will rejoin us, and we'll talk about the practical applications of mic processing in today's studios. Not necessarily recording studios, but in actual broadcast studios like most of us are involved with. Our show this week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Angry Audio. Chris Tarr is here to tell us something about Angry Audio.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know. where do I, right. Yeah. Get really angry. So, you know, we're going to be talking about the mic processors there, but there's so much more to Angry Audio. They have solutions for every problem you've got in the studio, other than the guys on the air. Things like the Rave Radio Mixing Console. That's a brand new console coming out with all the features you need. If you're, let's say, you know, voice tracker, or you're doing production out of your house. The Rave Mixing Console is a great little console, great for production studios, things like that. What else do they have? The headphone gizmo. You want to have a place to plug in your headphones? You know, it used to be where we'd drill holes in the countertops and we'd drop in little plugs. This thing, the headphone gizmo, mounts underneath the cabinetry, has a headphone jack. It's got volume control built in, all of those separate things that you can put in there, and you can daisy chain them so that everybody in your studio has a feed from the for their headphones. What about, let's say, signal lights? The Yellowtech signal lights are kind of an industry standard for that. They're very nice, the brushed aluminum, but let's face it, they're a little pricey for smaller studios. You may not, you know, that might be a little bit out of your budget. These studio signal lights are very nice looking. They're in black, and they have all those colors that you'd imagine or that you'd want for your studio, but a lot less expensive. And you can get a signal light gadget to help wire all that up. I remember doing Yellowtech lights, trying to wire them all up to my Axia stuff, and it can be a little difficult to do. Well, the signal light gadget helps you with that, helps you program the colors. You can tie it into your remote controls on your consoles and in your studio and have it do all kinds of things. Those are just a few of the things you can pick up at Angry Audio. If you go on their website, angryaudio.com, you will see all kinds of different solutions for your studio. So I'll tell you what, problems disappear when you get angry. Check out their website, angryaudio.com, then talk to your favorite broadcast supply vendor, like BSW or Broadcaster General Store, and ask for whatever you need from Angry Audio. The gadgets, gizmos, they got you set up. In a little bit, we'll learn more about the mic processing from Angry Audio at angryaudio.com.
You know, as much as Angry Audio...
No mic.
Stuff. Oh, hang on. Yeah, I got a mic.
You're silent, hello. Kirk. I can't hear
What's
you.
What's that?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, it's all right. No worries, man. Chris is in echo chamber today. Hey, our show is also brought to you. What's new? It's also brought to you by Max Connect Group. And, you know, we talk about, of course, their Max Connect wireless a product that gives you internet where you need it and is prioritized and all that. But Max Connect is a really growing company. They offer a full range of broadcast equipment sales. So you can get products from them, from, you know, the manufacturers a lot of them that we advertise here, including Nautel, Timio, Stereo Tool, Inovonics, RVR, WorldCast, Tyline, Comrex, just a few of them. Their experienced and knowledgeable sales team can help you choose the right equipment to make your project a success. Whether you're an old hand in broadcast engineering like Tom Ray or Chris Tarr or maybe even me, or whether you're new at it, I still meet new people in our business who, you know, are trying to figure out, how do we make the studio work? What do we need to buy? What do we not need to buy? Whether it's a simple mic replacement or a full turnkey studio or transmitter side upgrade, the folks at Max Connect Group can work with you to make that really work well. They can sell you what you need, but they can also install it if that's what you want, or they can, you know, they can do as much or as little as you like. They do have a team of really experienced broadcast engineers and technicians, and they can provide turnkey integrations, studio and transmitter side upgrades, and even contract engineering services. 100 years of combined broadcast engineering experience, their team really can handle almost any challenge. They've done dozens of studio builds all over the country. Looking to convert your analog plant over to AOIP? They've got you covered. Need to upgrade your automation system? That's not a problem. They can do that. And they can handle everything from equipment selection and purchase all the way through until final on-air light is lit. I like that. That's good. That's good copywriting there, Josh Bone. We strive to keep your project on time and on budget. They got a lot of happy customers, including Stacy Whitaker, the director of engineering at East Tennessee State University. Josh Bone and his team have done so many upgrades, including really amazing work on rewiring and remote control work, getting things to work at peak efficiency and much more automatically. Check it all out at Max Connect. The website Max Connect, I know it's spelled funny, M-A-X-X-K-O-N-N-E-C-T, and now it's called the Max Connect Group because they do so much so much to help the broadcast industry. Really successful at that. All right. Hey, we're going to continue with our conversation with Corny Gould. He's going to get right into the mic processing and explain what the controls do and a little bit about how they came to do what they do, because they're a little bit unusual. Let's see what he has to say. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Cornelius Gould. Corny, thanks for stopping by the house today.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Sorry about the little impromptu studio. It's not as good as it could be or should be, but...
Well, I said, hey, Kirk, I'm in town. You want to get together? And you're like, oh, yeah,
sure, okay. Sure. Well, you know, a couple of mint juleps in the studio is great.
Yeah, so, exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey, so we've been talking about the different processors that do a lot. You've taken a similar or the same hardware platform, or at least the DSP, and applied it to a mono processor. Why would I want a mono processor?
Well, it's a little more specific than that.
Okay,
it's actually a microphone processor.
Uh-huh. So,
and over the years, I'll back up a little bit. The chameleons, when I talk about the old analog chameleons and things like that, in the originally they were not in like broadcast radio; they were in my pirate station.
Ah,
so because I wanted my pirate station to sound good, so that's kind of where these all came out of. And
he had liners, the best sounding pirate station on the dial.
Yeah. On the Music FM.
Cleveland's Music
FM. 755, 55 after 7, 5 in front of 8 on the Music FM. So anyway.
The old disc jockey.
Yeah. Well, that's my stereotypical disc jockey impersonation.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right.
So I made these processors and they were good. But then I realized that, you know, these stations also have stuff on the microphones too. I need stuff on my microphones too, so I can sound like a disc jockey. So I would kind of cobble together these mic, you know, compression algorithms that will live on my microphone preamp output and on my mixers and things. And they kind of evolved in their own little way, separate from the four band units, and that they had their own adapting algorithms. But they're all around voices, because voices are very different. Voices are very weird in the way they are audio wise. You know, they're not like music. And so I came up with some stuff that was actually pretty nice. And at the end, and I'll send you a picture of the last of the analog microphone processors, which are mostly just compression, but they're built around optical LED photocells.
Yeah.
Because I like the characteristic sound that they had.
That time constant seems to work out well.
Voice. And those things aren't a constant time constant either.
Uh-huh.
You know, they kind of change depending on how you're hitting them. So the challenge I had was, you know, I talked to Catfish. He's like, Catfish, I really want to put my analog microphone processors in a box and make a mic processor. And so he's like, oh, tell me more about this. And so we had these long discussions about it. And then we decided to go ahead and do this because it sounded like something that would be in an Angry Audio wheelhouse. So I went to work and mapping that stuff in the DSP and out of that, we end up with the chameleon microphone processors. Well, there's a wrinkle that Catfish threw at me.
Yeah, there sure is.
And he
I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, he was like, okay, so how many knobs do we need to have on this microphone processor? I said, well, kind of 10 or so, maybe a little bit more. He goes, really? I said, yeah, why do we need so many controls? Like, because you don't know what microphone you're going to plug into it. You got to be able to adapt to anything. He goes, well, what if we knew what you're plugging into it?
Oh,
where are you getting at with this? And he goes, well, if we knew what the microphone was, would you still need all those controls? They can pare it down quite a bit. And Catfish's idea, since we're doing this under the chameleon term.
Yeah.
He kind of like starts saying, you know, my original idea, he goes, Corny, that's not really chameleon like, you know, you know, it's like he liked the way I was able to make things where they can adjust and you don't need a ton of controls to do things. So after he threw that at me, I was like, yeah, I guess if you knew what the microphone was, you wouldn't need as many controls, or the controls you have can be optimized and everything about it can be optimized around the mic. And he goes, exactly. So that kind of, that was the shift we took with that. So that's kind of the direction we ran with it, where we have two microphone processors now. Chameleon Smooth, which has been out for a little bit now. And the Smooth, as you might guess from the name, or maybe you didn't, the SM part of it means it's for Shure SM microphone.
Smooth. SM is for the Shure S. And that, because those have a fairly common capsule among the different SM mics.
The one thing I've noticed that certain companies that put out a family of microphones, there are some core characteristics that are very similar in all their mics. They may have a little more bass, may have a little more treble, maybe they're a little louder, a little less loud. But at the end of the day, the characteristics are really close.
Yeah.
And so you definitely get that with the Shure mics, and especially the ones that broadcasters love, which are SM7s, and the ones they really love, which is the SM5s, and I have the SM5s, and I love those too. So what I the take I went with on the Smooth processor is to set the controls up so that dynamic wise they react nicely to the Shure mics. And then as far as EQ goes, they work with the that sound that the Shure mics have. So you can turn on the sparkle on an SM7B, EQ it a little bit, and have something that kind of resembles an SM5 in its sound. You can't get this SM5 exactly with an SM7, but you can get a little closer with the controls I put in there. And then you can, conversely, you can plug an SM5 in it and it goes, oh, yeah, this is how I remember it. And you can just kind of run it flat or maybe put a little more bass in it.
It's worth pointing out, for those of you watching this, you know, since we're this goes out on a stream, there's plenty of data compression going, bit rate reduction going on there. We are not demonstrating mic processing today. Yes. In fact, we barely have a setup here in, in my living room. We got two different mics. They're both the same company, similar capsules, different magnets in them. And we're not even going through Corny's mic processor. I want to point that out.
Yes.
These are these raw mics going into a laptop. And I'm sorry, we actually didn't have enough. We didn't have a second mic processor. So we really couldn't hook them both up. Anyway, just want to let you know, we're not demonstrating a mic.
Yes.
The sound of Corny's mic processing today, just because it couldn't easily be done.
I would point out, if you want a demo of sorts, there's on the Angry Audio YouTube page, I put up some videos where I was playing around with the mics on videos and try to demonstrate some things. And you can get an idea with those, but it's really not until you hear yourself through it that you can really tell what it does and hear what things like the room control do. But I do want to point out, though, so we have the Smooth. And the other microphone processor that just rolled out not too long ago is the Rebel.
For the
Electro Voice, RE mics.
For the RE mics, the Rebel. Okay.
Yes. So, and that's what we have sitting here today that we're poking around with in Kirk's room. So.
Now, I've listened to this, and I've actually heard it before at Angry Audio. Got a better demo today. And one of the problems we have in broadcast is most radio stations don't have the budget to invest in the room acoustics like they should.
Yeah, these days, yeah.
I can't tell you how many stations. I mean, one of my stations, there's an air conditioner 6 feet away, a window air conditioner. That's all we can do. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And so there's things that make noise. There's computers that make noise. There's imperfect room acoustics like this room. Mm-hmm. Pretty terrible. Sorry. it's decor. It's not meant for recording. and so... you've got this function that we think of it as a gate or a downward expander, but yours is apparently a lot more sophisticated.
It's a whole family of things going on in under the hood that the idea is to kind of tame some of the room tone and the room sound. And the way it works is that I was really happy with how it came out in that, you can just turn the room down, you know, just turn the room tone. It's a control that's called room.
Room, yeah.
If you turn it down, the room just goes away.
It does. I experienced it the first time 45 minutes ago when Corny demoed it. And what I noticed, I mean, at the high end of it, it doesn't add echo, but this room has all the echo that you need, not that you want it. Mm-hmm. And you know, you could call that, you know, either natural or in this case, Mammoth Cave. Mm-hmm. Okay. Turn it down. Turn it all the way down. It still sounds like your voice. It sounds very nice and intimate, but it sounds like you're talking into a pillow. I mean, there's no echo.
Well, there's echo there.
Yeah.
It will be there when you're talking, but it's only there when your voice is there.
And this
extreme example is like this.
Yeah.
You will hear the echo around your voice, but it doesn't trail on and on forever.
Well,
That's kind of like where the gate part of it comes in, but the gate's a real subtle piece of the equation. Now, if you're in a typical studio, like a typical radio studio, where it's not like this room, but there's some acoustic ambience going on, then you would sound like you've just spent a bunch of money and through more treatment in the room.
See, I think a perfect demo would be to set this up at New York's Grand Central Terminal, Grand Central Station, and do your voice tracking on your radio station from Grand Central and have it sound like you're
alone in a room talking to your...
We have a number of people that were so amazed by that they kind of wrote us and they were going to try it. And one guy wants to try it doing a recording voices on his tractor to see what it does. All these people, like, right now, they're thinking of all these things they want to try to see what they can do, you know. And we're like, okay, well, we'd love to hear it, you know.
So. Wow. Wow.
All right. So so you have designed algorithms for two ranges of microphones.
Yes.
Electric Voice RE range and the Shure SM range. And it's funny when you ask Catfish, well, do you have one for my Audio-Technica microphone? Nope. Well, can I use it with my AT? You can, but it's not designed for that. You know, it might sound fine, but if it doesn't sound fine, I can't, other than give your money back, I can't help you. It's meant for this mic and that mic.
Right now, about the best I can say there is if the characteristics of whatever mic you're talking about kind of resembles one of the two mics we have, you'll probably have an easier time using it with it.
Yeah.
Not that we won't make anything for other mics, but right now we just have the two. So.
Yeah. I hear you.
So what else? To tell you what, we're going to do this via B-roll. Mm-hmm. So Corny's going to give us a tour of what's going on with the front panel, and maybe he might give us a peek inside. So let's see the front panel here.
So on the controls you have in here is one is a de-esser control. And again, the de-esser is not like a typical de-esser. It's one where it's actually something that I designed as a thought experiment years ago with analog again. And I really liked the way it worked on voices and that it can control the S's without making you sound like a lisp. Like you're talking, hello, how are we doing, folks? You don't get that effect. And you don't get that, because a lot of DSs, I just don't like them. Even when they move a little bit, it just makes the S's sound funny. So here you can't really tell other than that, oh, it doesn't sound as S-y, but I still sound like me when I'm saying S-y, even if you really crank it hard. About the only thing you might notice is that if you want some extra crispness in your voice, with the de-esser turned all the way up, you're not going to get that crisp. So you have to back it off a little bit until you hear what you want without the S's going. But it's still way easier than most de-essers. You have a drive control where you can adjust how much compression there is. Now the compression part of the Chameleon mic processors, they are self-tuning. So you will definitely have compression on your voice and you can get loud and get quiet, but you're not going to hear the mechanics of the compression happening. It's going to sound at first, it's going to seem to be a little naked at first as you realize, oh wait, no, I can talk loud. I can talk quiet. And you don't get that weird, you know, weird bounce back, you know, effect that you get with a lot of compression. And then from there you have the room control. And as you go across the front panel, the next thing you see is a little mute LED, and you might wonder what's that all about. And most people probably will never see that lit up at all. But on the back of the box, we have a studio hub connector where you can have a little button. And I have the button somewhere and I meant to bring it out with me, but I don't have it with me at the moment. But there's a little button that you can plug into the back of it. And if you're using this as without a mixer and you're just feeding, like if you're doing like a Zoom thing or a video stream and you want to use this for that, you can use this button where it has you can tap it for, tap the microphone on or off. It'll mute and unmute. If you then you can tap it and use it as a cough button as well. This depends on how long you're holding the button down, what function it does. So it's pretty cool. In fact, I have one in the car because I'm bringing it back, because this particular unit here is from my office, and I use this microphone in this unit whenever you see me doing Zoom calls and all that. That's what this is. And I wanted that button so I can kind of easily mute and turn it off and on if I'm not saying anything. And then from there you have the controls you have are the low and high controls, which are your EQ. So the low is for the bass, and the high is for the high end, of course. They work a little differently, like on the depending on the unit you have. So with the Rebel microphone processor, when those controls are at the 12 o'clock position, that's flat. And then it's a cut and a boost from there. So that's how the Rebel works. The Smooth, most of the time you don't really want to be cutting. Let's see here how we do this. So for the low band, you can cut or boost that. So 12 o'clock is flat. Mm-hmm. The high band, however, is just a boost. So all the way down is flat, and you can add more high end because most of the SM7 mics and SM58s, they tend to be a little dull.
Yeah.
And you want to put some, most people are cranking more high end.
Right.
So it's just
right.
high end.
Nobody wants to cut the high end on SM.
Right, right.
And neither do we. So.
Right, yeah. Okay. So those controls work differently between the two boxes. So that's going to be the biggest upfront difference between the two that you run into. And then from there, you just have your output level, which is a pot where you optimize your output level.
What's that one say? OL?
Yeah, overload. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought it meant oh lordy.
Yeah, if you're driving the preamp too hard and you're clipping, you'll see the overload LED come on. So and that brings up another point too with the preamp gain on these mics. The preamps are really quiet, and since I have access to a really quiet, because that was another pet peeve of mine and Catfish as well, is how noisy a lot of mic processor preamps are.
I must say the little Zoom brand mixer that we're using right now, it has audible noise in the mic pre's. And so what your box here is nothing like what you're hearing on this broadcast.
Yes. So I wanted to be, especially when it comes to the Shure mics, I wanted to make sure you get this lots of range and optimum noise matching. So the way the room control is set up, the gate function of the room control is kind of calibrated to the optimum preamp gain level for your mics.
Hmm.
So if you're using one of these and you're hearing a little bit of gating action, you probably need just a tad more preamp gain. And it doesn't take much, just like a little nudge on the screwdriver.
Yeah.
And it'll either clear it up, or if you're hearing too much, nudge down. And you'll know if you're a little too much because you can just do a hey test, and if the overload light comes on, go, it's too much.
Yeah. So. Okay, cool.
So we have a couple of switches in here as well.
Yes, dip switches.
Yes. So the first one is a high pass filter. And this is one where the one thing I hate about most high pass filters on a mic processor is if you engage it because you need it, it also takes out a good chunk of the bass in your voice.
Right.
It's an audible change, and I tend to just live with whatever thumps and bumps happen because I just don't like the way that sounds on my voice. And for me, I would definitely tell because my voice is lower than most. But so the way I designed this is you can turn it on and it's a really sharp high pass. It's enough that you can bang on tables and things. Oh, sorry. You can bang on tables and things and not hear the banging at all.
You can
just kind of hear the knocking and not the bumping and bumping. You can usually handle the mics, especially the Shure mics. People like to touch them and handle them. And you hear the little thump when they do that. And this gets rid of all that.
Hmm.
But it also keeps the low, most of the low frequency content in your voice intact. So you can do all that, but still, and they even have special equalization things to kind of make it sound normal to you in there. The other thing is the way that the high pass filter works, it also kind of gets rid of a lot of the asymmetry in the voice too. So it's almost like a little phase rotator thing that goes on.
And for those who don't know, asymmetry is a natural outcome of the way our voices work, that we tend to have more positive or more negative peaks.
It depends on what I'm saying. So my voice is either symmetrical or it's really positive or it's really negative. So
and having that asymmetry in the waveform makes processing a bit more difficult, right?
Yes.
All right. So and the low pass, the high pass filter,
just because of all the games I'm playing, it has its natural phase rotation kind of effect to voices without that phase rotatory sound that you usually would hear when you turn them on.
Okay.
So that was kind of a benefit.
Nice side benefit. Yeah. Okay. All right.
And then the other control next to that is the sparkle control. And for a lot of mics, like an RE20 for the Rebel, they tend to be kind of dull sounding. They sound nice. They're flat, but the high end kind of rolls off a little bit. So you can engage the sparkle and add a little bit of sparkle and get you a little closer to it with an RE27 does, but without the harsh brightness that some voices will have with an RE27.
Hmm.
And with the Smooth, of course, like we were mentioning before, most of the Shure mic capsules kind of have that muted high end to them, except for the SM5. The SM5 is nice and sparkly, which is why people like it. And it's very different from the other Shure mics. So with that sparkly switch turned on an SM mic, the way it's designed is it gives the SM7 mics a little more of that high end sparkle that the SM5s have, the SM5B. And then from there, we have the processor. You can turn it off, bypass the processing, turn off and on. And then these boxes have line input. So if you have your favorite preamp that you just got to use with it because you like it, you can just switch it to line and feed it into the line input.
Ah, okay. So, either mic or line input then.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the output, is that always line level output? Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then in the output, there's also an AES output as well.
Really?
Yes.
AES digital
runs,
output?
Yes.
Okay.
It runs in parallel with the analog.
Okay. So. And it's available either on Studio Hub or on XLR.
Yes.
Cool.
And the input's always analog. It's always a microphone going in, but the output could be analog or AES.
That's a beautiful box. That is really cool. And the smooth box is extremely similar. The algorithms are different.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, one of the EQ controls operates differently.
Yes.
Because it's meant just for that mic.
Yes. Cool. And all the contours of the EQs are different because they're tailored to the microphone we're targeting.
That's awesome. I think, good features.
The compression is a little different too.
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about
that. The compression algorithms are attuned a little differently for each mic. Because the characteristics of these mics are not the same as an SM mic. So,
but you cannot adjust the compression characteristics. It's been yes. Cornelius'd.
Yes, the version of the smarts that are in here are kind of biased around the microphone at hand. So
yeah, cool. Corny, I thanks for the tour. This thing is so cool. And of course, the only way to experience this for yourself is to try one out. Mm-hmm. You can go to a trade show. There are different dealers that might have one on display. Mm-hmm. You can come to Franklin, Tennessee and get a...
Or you can just do a 30-day demo with it.
Oh, okay. Dealers offer a demo.
Yeah, Angry Audio has one. So, you get it. If you like it, great. If not, well, you can return it and no questions asked and get your money back, so... If it's not what you're looking for, and I'm not saying this is like the answer for everybody, but because there's going to be people that have something really particular that they are looking for that we're not addressing, but for the world in general, for the 85%, 90% of the world, this will be the perfect tool for them. So
All right. Corny, man, thanks you for stopping by.
Oh, you're welcome.
I appreciate it very much. And hey, those of you watching or listening, yes, I know, very imperfect setup. if you use the mic processor, though, the Rebel or the Smooth from Corny's design, from Angry Audio, you're going to have much better results than what you're hearing in this noisy room. And of course, when we started recording, the sun was behind the clouds.
Yes.
And then the sun came out, and here we are just all
blown out. I think the forecast was saying it was supposed to be cloudy by now, but that didn't happen.
Those weather people, they don't know what they're talking about.
Oh, wait, you resemble that remark.
That's right. Thanks for joining us, to Corny.
Right,
and we hope to see Corny again on another This Week in Radio Tech. Okay. Hey, we've got Tom, Ray, and Chris Tarr coming up in just a minute to talk about practical implementations of mics in studios. But we're going to hear from our sponsor, and that's Broadcaster General Store. One of their vendors, one of their manufacturers is Broadcast Tools. Broadcast Tools, you know them and you love them. And Broadcast Tools is the maker of a lot of cool stuff. Today, I want to talk to you about the IO Sentinel 4 G2. I don't know if you have to remember all those numbers or not, but it's the IO Sentinel 4 G2. This is a cute little box, and what it does, let's say you've got a transmitter site where you really don't need a full remote control. Maybe you've got a Nautel transmitter. You've got that built-in advanced user interface. You can turn the transmitter on and off. You can take all the readings that you need. You can turn the power down and up and all that kind of stuff. Check the modulation. Well, but you need to do a few other things, or check on the tower lights and things like that. The IO Sentinel 4 G2 is the perfect solution for this. It's a web-based GPIO interface. It's a very full-featured Ethernet-based data acquisition and remote control device. It has four optically isolated status inputs. These are logic inputs and four programmable relays. It's got these four optically isolated status or logic inputs can be configured for what you call wet or dry contact closure status and logic monitoring. And the four 1-amp
single pole, double throw relay outputs. So you can have, you know, normally closed, normally open. They can be configured for on, off, pulsed, or reboot operation. It can be controlled locally, monitored locally or remotely over any IP network, including private networks or public internet. IP-based industrial control networks can do that as well. You can operate the product using a web browser or web-enabled mobile device. An email notification can be configured to alert up to 8 email or SMS email addresses. You can log system status along with the site ID. That can all be emailed along there. So if you got a bunch of them, you know where the message is coming from. It also has SNMP traps and set get to allow multiple units to be monitored and controlled with SNMP management software. This is so cool. One of the cool things that you can do with it is you can actually operate it in a full duplex mode. You can basically make yourself a really long IO extension cord. So you can give a contact closure in one city and have it show up in another city, being carried full time over public internet or a private, line, whether it's fiber or an IP radio pair, whatever. If you got an IP connection, you can control this thing and monitor what's going on. It's also a good web-enabled backup, transmitter on-off control system. You got lots and lots of features there. It's fully RFI-proofed. The power supply is surge-protected. It's got a grounding lug on the back of it. Even though the case is plastic, it's got a grounding lug, and it's, like I said, fully protected. It's really cool. And this is just one of dozens and dozens and dozens of products that Broadcast Tools makes. I was looking through the catalog today, and I found this. I thought, oh, I've got a couple of sites that could use this where we, otherwise have a Nautel transmitter or another brand that has a web interface. We just need a little bit of logic out there to monitor something or turn it on and off. So check this out from Broadcast Tools. Their slogan is problem solved. You can get these from Broadcaster's General Store. Yeah, their website is bgs.cc. And make a note of their phone numbers, 352-622-7700. They're really nice folks to talk to on the phone. They are open lots of hours. You're talking to somebody at home or in the office, they have full access to a huge amount of information about delivery and such as that. Thanks a lot, Broadcast Tools and Broadcasters General Store, bgs.cc, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right, gentlemen, let us hit a bunch of stuff here real fast. Tom Ray is with us. Chris Tarr is with us. Let's talk about microphones in the studio in radio stations and what are some of the best techniques that you have found to make people sound good on the radio, not recording studios, just on the radio. Let's go to our guest first, Tom Ray. What's your top advice? Maybe the top three or four things.
Remove it from the room. No. I've worked a lot of studios where they had just multiple microphones in the studio of different types. And matter of fact, where I first found out about this mic, the owner of the station just bought them along with the DBX processors. And when we put a new board in, he had some mic. I'd never seen some of these mics before, and you could tell. And he wanted to do a mayoral debate. They were having a big mayoral thing in town, and he was going to bring him into this tiny studio with all these different mics. And I looked at him, I said, no, it's not happening. So we ended up taking that out of the house. But now when he brings people in, everybody's balanced and everybody sounds the same and they sound good. And I think that's kind of a big thing. If you can take someone who's not a broadcaster and kind of tweak the processing a little bit on those guest mics, and make them sound good, make them sound like a broadcaster. That's a big plus, because you don't want the guy to sound like an amateur. It doesn't work.
What do you do about a noisy or echoey room? You got an air conditioner that has to be in the room for some reason, or maybe you've got some noisy computers that for whatever reason, they're in the room with the disc jockey. They got fans going. What do you suggest?
Well, I tend to try to design a, if I'm going to design a room, I tend to try to design the room such that those fans and such are pointing away from the microphones. They're not behind the guy on the air. They're usually on the other side of the console facing away. And it's okay to put a little bit of sound treatment down under the console. You don't, you don't want to create a blanket around this the equipment and have it, you know, just fry. But I do that, and I tend to use the noise gate a lot. You don't want to set the noise gate a little too quick, because all of a sudden you'll be talking and it'll start doing that. So you want to kind of roll it off and set your threshold so that it's just about where the noise is. So you don't,
it's kind of
there way in the background. And then when it comes up, when the guy starts talking, it's not a big deal and it's not a shock. So.
Chris, you have techniques that are like that or different?
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, when I do studios, or at least when I have the opportunity to really do them from scratch, I generally, you know, put all of the computers and everything in a different room and extend them out. And then, like, you know, the ceiling vents and things, I use baffles and that sort of stuff. But, you know, one thing to watch for, and I see this a lot in studios where you'll have the main microphones and the guest microphones just slightly off axis from each other. And when you have two or three people in the room, all of a sudden everybody sounds hollow because everybody's microphone is picking up everybody else. So, you know, that's one thing you got to watch for, especially if you're running heavy compression on your microphones, is that, you know, a lot of times you'll bring up a guest microphone and it'll be picking up you as well as your own microphone picking you. And so all of a sudden everybody sounds like they're in a tunnel or, you know, it just gets really thin. So mic placement is a big one, and you also need to tune your mic processing, not only for the person on the air, but for the room as well. Because if you've got a lot of reflections or you've got microphones that are close to each other, then you're going to have to use a little less compression, a little more gating, and that sort of thing. So, you know, there's really a couple of different things you've got to work with when you're trying to set up microphone processing and microphones. And sometimes it's, you know, even mic choices, you know, are kind of predicated on that, where if you know you're going to have, you know, a lot of people very close together, then you want very unidirectional microphones and that sort of thing. So, you know, that's a big one. Obviously, you know, shock mounts, you know, how many times has somebody banged on something? And, you know, right now I'm banging on my desk and you can't hear it through the microphone. You can hear the echo of it. So, you know, shock mounts, things like that. All, you know, you have to look at a microphone as more than just the microphone. It's an entire system, and you have to really set up that entire system and tailor it for the people and the place that you're going to be using that microphone.
What advice do each of you give to on the air people, especially if you've got a room that's not perfect? Look, if you've got a really quiet room, maybe your mic technique doesn't matter as much. But if you've got a room where there's some unavoidable noise elsewhere in the room due to bad design, or you can't wait to redo the room, but for now, you know, you got to have that window air conditioner over there because you're in Hawaii. There's no central air conditioning in the building and you're renting it, and there's got to be an air conditioner there, and you really don't want to hook up a kill switch on the compressor to the mic because that's hard on the compressor. What do you tell the announcers, Tom Ray?
I tell them to try to close work the mic as much as possible. And if they're going to start, let go. If they're going to let go, if they're going to yell, if they're going to get really enthusiastic, then back off a bit. But don't, you have to, in that situation, you have to work it close because, you know, the noise is going to take over. I mean, after a while, especially if you're quiet for a second. So.
Yeah. And so you want the desired to undesired ratio of audio to be very high. High amount of desired audio,
that is the voice,
to the undesired audio, the air conditioner 6 feet away. Chris, you have a different thought on that?
No, I agree. And again, that's where mic selection becomes very important. You don't want, in that situation, to have a cardioid or an omnidirectional microphone because, you know, you're going to be picking that up. If you can get something that's very unidirectional and pointed away from where the air conditioner is and then work it close, like Tom says, that's a big part of the game right there. You know, that'll fix a lot of the evils that are in that room.
Now, Chris, your mic to me behaves exactly as expected. You know, an RE20's got a reasonably tight pattern on it. It's a great vocal mic and it sounds good with you, Tom. I am surprised as heck that the mic that you're using, cause it looks like the kind of condenser mic that's likely to have a very omni pattern, and maybe it's got a switch on it to give it a cardioid, but typically it's not a tight cardioid. And yet you're not in the most ideal environment there in your studio, and yet you sound really good. And I know it's a combination of have mic processing in there. So I'm surprised at how that mic
make him feel good. You sound awesome, you know, Tom.
Well, I was surprised when when the owner of the station brought these mics in, because I was looking at them going, I don't know, and gave it a try. And I was like, wow, this thing's good, because he does have a studio where he's got fan noise and he's got stuff behind him. And there's the rock station on one side of the studio and there's the country station on the other side of the studio. And half the time, this is a talk studio. They leave the door open and people from the office are walking by the studio. And you don't hear any of that with these mics. It's incredible. I was shocked. I really was.
What does that mic cost? Do you remember?
This mic is about $150.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And you know, it sounds good. I mean, I wouldn't put it up against the Neumann, but I'd put it up against the RE20, and it depends on what you're looking to do with it. You know, for what I use this for, works fine.
Yeah.
Well, you bring up something too that, I mean, a lot of talk studios are like that, where, you know, they'll actually have the doors open. And I'm trying to remember, there was a station I worked at briefly. It might have been WROK in Rockford, or was that same way, where they always had the doors open, and it would just make me nervous. And they're like, no, these microphones, they won't pick you up in the hallway. Don't worry about it. So yeah, I mean, and you're dealing, especially in talk formats, you're oftentimes dealing with people who really don't understand any of that anyway. So, you know, if you can set that up in such a way where you can do that and you don't have to have a closed up little studio, that's great.
You know,
hey, well, guys, we're gonna have time for.
Okay, sorry. Well, I was just gonna say you have the door open, and they say, oh, it's not gonna pick you up in the hallway until that one time when the delay's not on.
Of course, another option that you have to use at a basketball court and a lot of sports games, but sometimes they're used in studio, is a sports headset with that mic right in front of your mouth or very close. And then you get noise cancellation because of the way it's built, and you get that, you know, very large ratio of desired audio, the mic, the voice right there to the undesired. But now those mics don't always sound the best, because they're tailored for voice, tailored for intelligibility, and tailored for rejecting outside noise. So that is an option that some people do. Hey, we got to take our last quick break, and we'll be back in a minute with our tip of the week from each of the gentlemen, but it's going to have to be quick. But let's talk real quick about broadcast bionics and virtual rack. So there's been so much talk about virtualization and virtualizing various parts of the broadcast chain. At this year's NAB, you're going to see more virtualization than ever before, including from broadcast bionics. And what has bionics done that's different than what everybody else is doing? They're making it super convenient. You don't have to be a Linux expert in order to virtualize some parts, the parts that are available now of your broadcast chain. So that means you can choose an Axia Altus console. You can get that installed in a couple of minutes in a virtual rack just by clicking. It's like an app store. You know, click what you want. You can install a Forza audio processor. You can install a Sound 4 audio processor or codec, a range of codecs from 2WCOM. Also, you can install a Telos VXS phone system, all literally with the touch of a button, installing it. Now, you still need to license that product from its respective manufacturer, you know, whether it's Telos Alliance or Sound4 or 2WCOM. But you don't have to be a Linux expert to deploy containerized broadcast products. You can go to the Broadcast Bionics website. And so about 9 months ago or so, we did a show here on This Week in Radio Tech where Dan McQuillan was kind of the brainstorm behind it. He knew that deploying Docker containers is not for the faint of heart. It is not simple. It does take some skill that most broadcast engineers don't have. I don't have. I needed help from my colleagues at Telos Alliance to get my broadcast containers installed. And yet every day I've got a station using a virtual audio console, a virtual phone system, and we've got virtual audio processing as well. Do it with Broadcast Bionics Virtual Rack. you get a piece of hardware, you get the actual server itself, you get it preloaded with the management software that it needs, and then you literally, it's an app plus an application library. You click on it, it goes and downloads the latest version of whatever you've asked for. It installs it properly with regard to the local internal networks, whether you want one network or two. Maybe you want a separate network for your audio VIP and a separate network for your remote access. That's what I do. That's what most people do, but not everybody. And it installs for you. It won't let you over-install. You cannot install more than what the CPUs inside are capable of doing. But all that's managed for you. If you want to have automatic backup and failover, you can buy another box, and those talk to each other. And they do that. Go to the Broadcast Bionics website, and Suncast will scroll down to the bottom of the screen, you'll see there are three videos there where Dan McQuillan explains and shows how Virtual Rack works. Now, you know, there's other solutions for other companies. I mean, my employer, TELUS Alliance, sells a piece of hardware, the AP3000. It comes preloaded with the software that you want. Same thing for one of the dealers in Canada, Pippin Technical, PTS. You can do the same thing with them. You can install it yourself. Typically, you're going to pay the manufacturer to come in and get all the I's dotted and the T's crossed. But if you do it with Broadcast Bionics Virtual Rack, you can do it yourself. It is so cool. It's so convenient. Please check it out. If this is a direction you want to go, and I think eventually there's going to be a lot of folks going that direction. I know I have at some stations, and a whole lot of other people are too. Check it out from Broadcast Bionics at bionics.co.uk for Broadcast Bionics Virtual Rack. It's sold by their dealers all around the world. Check it out. All right, we got a couple minutes left. Tip of the week. Tom Ray, can you give us an important tip of the week for microphones?
Important tip of the week for microphones. Well, you know, first of all, don't bang them around. Don't drop them. If you're going to set them up in the studio, try to keep them away from noise sources and use the appropriate microphone for your appropriate environment. You know, just kind of, if it's going to be noisy, use a directional.
Do you have a favorite microphone cable? Mics are very low level audio, very tiny signal going through the cable over to the preamp. If you're using a traditional, you know, dynamic or condenser mic, do you have a favorite cable?
I typically use the Canari cable with Neutrik XLR connectors on either end, and they work out very well.
Yeah, yeah. It stays noise-free that way, doesn't pick up hum.
Stays noise-free, doesn't pick up hum, and you can beat the daylights out of them, and they still come back for more. So take them on a remote and have a great time, you know?
All right, Chris Tarr, what is your tip of the week for a microphone, sir?
Well, you know, first of all, try them all. You know, get a, if you can find somebody who has one, or maybe, you know, buy one or demo one and do a little shootout and find out which ones you prefer. Also, I believe that there are certain mics for certain applications. For example, the RE27 is a very bright microphone. I like using that on AM stations. I think they really do a good job of cutting through the noise. So, mm-hmm. You know, there is a lot of that going on. So, you know, try different microphones. As far as microphone cables, you know, I like my oxygen-free gold $1,000 cables that do all the, you know, the electrons in one direction. And, you know, no. Actually, I'm using right now a $3 microphone cable from Amazon. So I don't really have a preference there.
All right. Listen, we're out of time. We should do a whole nother show on this. And I was delighted to have Corny to stop by along with his friend Kelly. They were at the house for a while, went out to dinner. So it was great to have them. Tom, if you or Chris come to town, hey, we'll record part of a show. And also, and very importantly, go to dinner. So come to Nashville sometime.
You bet.
You're invited anytime. We got guest rooms. So, you know, we don't have to shower together. We got separate showers for everybody.
Wait a minute. How much a night, and do you give Hilton points? No, never mind.
no Hilton points, but for you, it's free.
Excellent. Right. Excellent.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us. Thanks for your tips. I appreciate you dearly. Thanks also to Suncast, who produces the show. Thanks for being on top of things, Suncast, whispering in my ear, telling me sweet nothings, and getting me up to date on what the heck is coming up next. I appreciate it. We got to go. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.